Okay, welcome to episode 39 of Scientology. Recording on October 14th, still Monday technically. I'm actually going to take these headphones off because it bothers me when I listen to it so closely. Okay, so yeah, it's still technically Monday on this day. It is late at night and yeah, I hope you guys are doing well. Welcome to the podcast. I'm happy to have you. Always happy to have you. Even though this is easily, of all the things that I do with regularity, and I include this podcast because it's something that I'm at least 39 episodes in as of now, so I do it with regularity. This is the hardest thing that I do is force myself to do this thing. For some reason, like, I drag my feet so hard doing this thing because it's, I don't know why. It, like, always feels like it's, you know what it is? I think I do know what it is. I think it's the idea that, well, I'm just talking to myself, really. I'm just in my apartment alone talking to myself in front of a computer. And I got no, like, instant feedback when I do this. So it's really, it's hard enough when you do live performance to know whether or not you're good at it or people enjoy it or whatever that might, however you want to, you know, validate it or anything like that. But doing this, it's so incredibly confusing for me because it's really hard for me to convince myself that it's interesting or entertaining. But I've had enough genuine feedback from you guys, and you guys still listen, so there's got to be something good going on here. But it really does feel like I am just kind of going crazy alone, talking to myself. But that's something I have to completely and constantly reframe in my own head because that's not how you perceive it at all. Because I'm talking directly to you through your headphones or your speakers or whatever. It's just maybe I'm doing too many mushrooms lately. There could be that. But you got to appreciate how odd it is to just be alone and ramble. I mean, we all kind of do that, walking around alone. I think everybody talks to themselves. I had a really funny memory about that the other day. I was talking to my friend. Years ago, I was at a grocery store. It was winter in New York, and I was over by UCB. I was working at the old UCB theater in Chelsea, and there was like a grocery store above it, and I was doing crowd control or something outside, helping people get into the theater. And I went inside the grocery store to get a coffee, and there was some probably homeless person or close to it. It was this lady walking around with a hood up, talking to herself about the Lord or whatever, and but also outwardly to everybody else who was around, just sort of, you know, one of those people that they're talking and everybody else is looking elsewhere because they don't want to get engaged in it. But I was standing at the coffee thing, and she came up right next to me and started saying some shit. Again, not really at me, just at whoever was around. But she was looking directly at me about, you know, saying something about, like, and that's why Jesus said this. And she goes, right? And I looked at her and I said, oh, I'm sorry, are you talking to me? I thought you were on the phone. And she started laughing, and we both laughed. She goes, yeah, I could understand how it would seem that way because, well, everybody's talking on these hands-free devices now. So, no, but I'm just talking about the Lord. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not interested in that. I was just getting a coffee. But it was kind of a funny thing to be able to see her break the fourth wall of being insane and just address how odd it is that we all do see that. And we all do talk to ourselves. There's never been a better time to be one of those people who just walks around talking to yourself, because you can get away with it like you never could before. I mean, everybody's walking around just having conversations, and you don't know if they're on the phone or if they're communicating with some spirit. Could be the same shit in, like, Ghost, where, you know, you're like Whoopi Goldberg, and Patrick Swayze's just talking to you, trying to get you to go find Demi Moore and tell her some shit. Like, who knows? But it's a really good time to be that kind of crazy if you happen to be. October 14th. We are deep into pumpkin spice season right now. You guys aware of that? Does it piss you off? Are you one of those people that gets angry about pumpkin spice lattes? I don't understand those people. Like, listen, I'm not saying they're the fucking greatest cup of coffee I've ever had. I usually have one when the weather starts to kind of change a little bit because I feel like you're ringing in the season. I like to have one pumpkin beer too. I don't sit there and hammer them, but it's festive. I like festive shit like that. I like hot apple cider, ginger snap cookies. I like pumpkin pie, the whole thing. I love the fall and the winter seasons. But it always makes me confused when people are like dogging on people for drinking pumpkin drinks, or they're just like typical white girl shit or whatever, whatever it might be, whatever your hang up is about stuff. And there's something in that criticism about stuff that other people like that doesn't affect your life at all, that is not the reason everything is shitty, but it's connected to the reason that everything is shitty right now. Like, everybody has this negative attitude about the world. Well, not everybody, but there is a pervasive negative attitude about the world, in general. And I think a lot of it can be chalked up to that kind of thing. Like, you're concerning yourself with stuff that you should not be concerned with, and you're letting it affect you in a way that you shouldn't allow it to affect you, right? Like, who gives a shit if people like pumpkin spice lattes? Like, why would that make you mad? Are they making you drink them? Because if you're being forced to drink pumpkin spice lattes, I can understand being angry about that. I'd be like, no more. I don't want any more of those. Like, no, you have to have them. It's the same thing as like, fucking, you could connect that to like gay marriage or anything. It's like, what the hell does that bother you? You're not being forced to get gay married. What is it? How does that affect your life? It's like, what am I supposed to do about that? Nothing. Just do your shit. It's like, if pumpkin spice lattes piss you off, just take a break from getting coffee at the store for a while. Make coffee at home. Might save you a couple of bucks. You don't have to see it. Why does that bother you? The reason things like that bother people, I'm convinced, is because they're angry about other stuff in their life, and they see other people enjoying things and not being angry about the things that they are angry about. So they resent them for finding any kind of joy. And that's a really bad way to live, but that's how a lot of people live. And they don't acknowledge it. Because I don't think that you see when you do it, really. When you're doing that, when you're just angry and depressed even, because I was just watching Gary Goldman, a comedian who has a special on HBO now called The Great Depression, and it's all about his like battle with depression over his lifetime. And it's getting all kinds of critical acclaim. It's fine. It's not by any means the funniest or most amazing thing I've ever seen, but it's certainly not bad at all. But it's more insightful than anything else, which, I'm not meaning to shit on him about it. God knows I've been doing that kind of thing for a while, but point is I enjoyed it, but I have like personal hang-ups about that guy because I've met him over the years a number of times, and he's never been very kind to me, and I'm sure that that has something to do with his mental illness and shit. But anyway, he and another comedian, Robert Kelly, were having a discussion at the Comedy Cellar, a place that I would cut one of my fingers off to be a regular performer at. And they were talking in the back area about depression, and I forget the full context of what they were saying, but Goldman brought up the concept of like when you're going through depression, you tend to catastrophize things. And that made me kind of find a connection in my own head while I was, because I was watching this while I was like doing my morning exercises. And thinking about the way that people are all angry and everybody thinks the world is going to hell in a handbasket, when in reality, there has truly been no better time to be alive for the general population of the world. I mean, things are so incredibly good. When you really take a step back from it and look at that compared to all of the time in human history, there has never been a better time to be a living human being, ever. But we're so convinced that everything is so bad, or getting worse, or you know, like, the world's falling apart, or this and that. And what I realized in watching that and hearing him mention that when you're depressed, you tend to catastrophize, which means that you make things out to be much worse than they actually are, it made me realize that I feel like, as a society and a Western culture, we are depressed as a society. And as a result of that, we're catastrophizing social things. And the strangeness about that comes around where it's like, well, if it's never been better, if things have never been better, which I will stand by that, and I'll have a long argument slash conversation with anybody who wants to about how this is the greatest time in human history ever for general prosperity and health and well-being and all those things, then why are we depressed as a society? And the reason for that, I believe, is that things are so good and that we have the problem of being wealthy, basically. When people are rich, they're more prone to depression when they don't have to struggle for anything. And that's not to say that we don't all have to struggle, because we all each have our own individual struggles. But a lot of those struggles now are what would be described as superficial struggles compared to, let's say, coal miners at the turn of the century, or people fighting in World War I, or even Vietnam, or, you know, during that time, like, or any time before refrigeration, or any of that shit where we're just like, you're so occupied with staying alive and trying to hide from the idea of misfortune or disaster or famine or illness or whatever it might be. And now we have, you know, antibiotics and surgery, and there's certain social, safety nets that they're not going to necessarily let you fall completely through the cracks if something terrible happens to you. And that's not to say everybody does, but the point is it's never been more available. The idea that if something bad happens to you, there's probably an answer that can be worked out. So in a certain respect, we are all very, very well off. Even though, you know, we all struggle to try to make rent, and we're all trying to find something to give us a reason to do anything. And that's really what it comes down to, is like, whenever I talk to people, when I meet them, I'm always interested in what it is that they love to do, because that sounds like a strange question to some people, because they're like, well, you know, I don't really know what I love to do. I mean, I work at a law firm or a bank, or, you know, I'm going to school or whatever it might be, or this or that or the other thing, and it seems like a safe path, like a well-thought-out path, just basically trying to put money in the bank and not be poor, but have some kind of direction. But then at the end of it, like, if you don't really give a shit about it, you end up finding that you're not fulfilled in a certain way. And that's why I'm always interested in what it is that people love to do, because ultimately that's more interesting to me than what it is you do for a living. Because what you do for a living is just something you have to do a lot of the time. Like, there's a big difference between a career and a job, for instance. Like, if you have, like, take my situation just as an example, because I'm the only one here and I'm the only one talking, so it's probably best to reference me rather than some nebulous non-person that I'd have to construct an entire life about to explain this. So, as an example, I am a bartender. I have been a furniture maker. I've done a lot of things to try to, you know, I've been a waiter, I've been a fucking dishwasher, I've been a barback, I've been all these service industry jobs. I've done a lot of jobs. I've done photo retouching for advertisements. I've done all kinds of weird jobs. But my career is entertainment. And that's along the lines of what you're doing right now. You're listening to me. I'm hopefully entertaining you. I do stand-up comedy. I'm working on a stage performance of my one-person show, which I just did, but I'll get back to that. But the point is my trajectory is this, creative expression. I'm also a painter and a writer and an artist, and those things are what I file into my career. Now, my career is not anywhere close to where I would like it to be, but that doesn't mean I don't have a career. My career choice and my career path is that. My job is being a bartender. Now, I think that you can replace career with passion almost interchangeably. I think you can. And a lot of the time, people's jobs and their passions are aligned. And that's kind of what I feel like gives people the most lasting sense of satisfaction. And that's kind of the problem, is that we don't put enough emphasis on figuring out what it is that you love to do and what means something to you. And because of that, it seems foreign to people to put any kind of level of importance on that, because it seems like if you're not making money doing it, and if it isn't your job or your primary source of income, then it's not gonna, it's just goofing around. Like you're being childish, or you're wasting time, or you're not on the right track in some way or the other. And that is a very corrosive and poisonous way to deal with a people at large. All of society. We really need, in order to figure out how to kind of work on this collective depression, we need to figure out how to give people more encouragement to do things that they actually enjoy doing and find purpose in doing. And that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's like, well, I enjoy making macaroni necklaces and building things out of Legos, or, you know, whatever it might be. There's not that much money in that unless you run a summer camp or you're some fucking lucky freak that gets the job at the Lego store at Times Square or something like that, you know, but there's some way that you can find a sense of purpose doing something, and a lot of that is with, you know, volunteering or mentoring or just sharing the things that you're good at with people who want to be good at them. It doesn't necessarily need to be doing stand-up comedy or acting or singing or dancing or anything like that. It's just whatever you give a shit about. If you can just apply your energy to something that you give a shit about, that's not to say that you're going to get rich, but hey, you probably weren't going to get rich anyway. So my point, I guess I'm at sort of a crossroads with my working in bars and restaurants as a means of making a living right now. Because I feel like I don't care about it so much that I'm actually doing myself and the rest of my life and the people in my life a disservice by continuing to use that as my means of income. The idea that I put my job over my passion and my career and in the level of priority is not only holding me back, but it's also making everybody else in my life who knows me less happy and well off and, what do you call it? I guess I could just be doing more for my life, and because of that, for more for people in my life, if I were doing what I'm trying to do full time. If I just took it seriously and was like, this is what I'm doing. So, on that note, I am leaving town in 2 days. I'll be gone for a month. I'm going to Los Angeles, and then I'm going to Houston, where I will be putting on my second showing of my one-person show at the secret group on Wednesday, October 23rd. And if you're in Houston or you know anybody in Houston, please send them to the show. It's at 7:30. And that's, again, I'll post a bunch of stuff about it on Instagram and Facebook and all that. But, so I'm going to be doing that. And then after I'm in Houston, very briefly, I'm going to go to Europe. I'm going to go to Norway, Turkey, Kosovo, the Netherlands, and Poland to do shows for the United States military, which I have done before, but I did it in the Middle East and in Africa. And that was one of the most personally rewarding things I've ever done in my entire life. And I will be back on the 13th of November. And while I'm gone, I'm going to be trying to figure out ways to continue making money doing this type of thing. This shit. This is what I need to be doing with my life. This is how I need to be making a living and chipping away at getting closer to it. So that's what I'm going to be trying to do. And, you know what's interesting about this? I have to get up really early in the morning. I got to go see my my shrink for one more time before I go away for a month. And I've had some great, I don't want to call them breakthroughs, but moments of insight going to therapy and talking about some of this same stuff that I am talking about with you right now. It's hard for me to explain how important my daily exercises have been in my building of confidence in a routine that can get me someplace that I want to be. I'm sure I've talked about this before, but the fact that I get up every single day and I do a ton of push-ups and a ton of pull-ups and a ton of crunches and I do dips and handstands and swing a kettlebell, like, that makes me, it's like a compounding interest of confidence that's really been helping me just believe that I can do the things that I want to do. So let me just talk about this thing real fast, and then I'm going to get back to this. So before I leave, I'm getting things ready to go. I'm cleaning my room, which is currently still a fucking huge mess. I did a bunch of laundry. I'm going to clean it tomorrow real nice. I tried to get some new contacts and glasses before I left, which ended up being a bust, although I did go get an eye exam. Had a weird-ass optometrist nearby me. Well, I go with a Groupon, and I guess you get what you pay for with that shit, but he was just one of those guys who was kind of like talking over me the whole time, and I was like, look, I'm here to basically get my prescription refilled so that I can order contacts. And he's like, yeah, well, we need to make sure that your prescription's up to date because it's dangerous for you to be driving at night. I was like, I don't drive that much. He's like, well, if you drive at all, it's a problem. It's like, okay, I'm not here to fight. Just let me look at the fucking chart. And the problem with going to the optometrist, if you wear glasses, and he was not shy about reminding me that I am of a certain age where my eyes are going to start getting worse. I don't know why that was necessary to kind of chip away at my ego, but he's like, you're getting old, so your eyes are going to fucking start going. I was like, well, I didn't feel bad before I came in here, but I appreciate your fucking digs, so why don't you just sign off on this shit? Because the problem with going to the optometrist is I'm happy with my prescription. I can see just fine. The problem I have is I don't want to get a more intense prescription, because that's what ends up happening over the years. Every time you go to the optometrist and you get a slightly stronger prescription, your eyes acclimate to being worse. And I just want to keep it as light as possible, you know? So I fucking did the eye exam and I tried to kind of fudge it a little bit and just be like, yeah, I don't need it that intense or whatever. And then he just insisted on pushing it. So anyway, I got a free pair of contacts out of that, and that's fine. That'll last me. But when I went to reorder them, I just did my old prescription, and they got to get checked with that optometrist's office. And I'm hoping that they only barely look at the prescription, and they're just like, yeah. Well, he came in, and he paid the $50 for the thing, so we'll just let him order whatever the fuck off the line. But they're not going to get here by tomorrow, and tomorrow's the last day I have to get mail before I have to leave. So I ordered contacts. I'll get them in a month, I guess. And then I got to pay a few more bills. Yeah, that doctor was weird as shit. I mean, he was very confrontational during the exam, and we didn't talk much. And then as soon as we got done with the exam, and he was asking me, he's like, well, what do you do? I was like, well, I paint and I draw. And he started getting more interested in that. And then I told him I did stand up, and somehow it got off on him saying, like, you know, Hitler didn't die in World War II. I was like, excuse me? And then we just went on this whole weird rabbit hole of conspiracy theories about him saying that, you know, Hitler got smuggled down to Argentina and all this other shit. And I was like, is this part of the Groupon package that I bought? Is like sort of a weird X-Files after story thing? And then he showed me all this art that he bought, and his whole apartment's decorated with weird African artwork that he actually did himself, and he could not be less of an African person. It was just an odd thing. But I'm glad I got my eyes checked, because you got to do it every now and then. But, so yeah, I went and did that. I got to pay a few bills. I got to pay my phone bill. I got to write a rent check and leave that here to make sure that that gets paid when I'm gone. Hopefully Bob will put that in the right slot and I won't have to, it won't be too complicated. Yeah, aside from that, should be fine. But the other day, this is a kind of a elephant in the room thing. I did my show. I did my first run of my one-person show, which I have been tentatively calling Elsa, and I might just keep calling it that because it kind of fits the show for what it is, and I think I like it. So I did it over at Offside Tavern, which is on 14th Street. Did it at 7:30 at night. I had a suggested donation of $5, and I also put my Venmo up there, which is at Paul-Odo, if you feel like throwing me any extra cash just for the hell of it. And it went really, really well. I could not have asked for, I mean, the crowd was full. People showed up. They laughed where I wanted them to. They got emotional where I expected them to. I was not completely off book, although I'm shooting for that by the time I'm, well, maybe not in Houston, because I still got to do quite a bit of rewrites, but yeah, it's off to a good start. Got some great, great feedback, and really had a wonderful experience, and I'm looking forward to doing it more and really tightening it up, and I'm glad that I set that date and just did it. And that goes back to what I was trying to say before. If you are feeling unfulfilled and unsatisfied in your life right now, and you feel like sort of an emptiness, choose a thing that you've been wanting to do. Make it difficult. It should scare you. It should be a thing that you are nervous about trying to do. And then set a date that you are going to have that thing done by, and then start doing it. And make it a point to tell people it's going to be done. Pressure yourself. Load up that responsibility on your shoulders and get out there and do it. And I swear to you, you'll make it and you'll feel better about yourself for doing it. Because it's something that, like I was saying, like, this feeling that I have now about doing this morning routine and working myself up to the amount of exercises that I do every day. And I didn't start there, but I incrementally got there. If you just try to do incremental improvements in your life, you can get places that you really didn't think that you could. It's pretty amazing. And you can't expect to have that kind of confidence in yourself right off the bat. But if you just try to do something a little bit every day, getting you to where you're trying to go, you'll at least get farther, closer to it than you were. And then if you figure out it's not something you want to do, you're closer to something else. So find your thing, move towards it. Don't shy away from it because it's difficult. The reason it's important is because it is difficult, and vice versa. It's difficult because it's important. The things that you want to do and the things that you really know you need to do, they're going to keep haunting you. So just start. Just start working on it. Move towards it. Try to write that book. Just get after it. Say, I'm gonna have the first chapter written in 1 month. And you tell people. Tell somebody that you're accountable to and say, I'm gonna have that first chapter written in 1 month. You got a screenplay to get done? You say, all right, I'm giving myself 3 months and then I want you to read it in 3 months. Say, tell five people that. Be like, I'm going to give you this screenplay in 3 months. Will you please read it in 3 months? Because I'm going to give it to you on this date. And then keep telling them it's coming, and freak yourself out to the point where you'll have to be embarrassed and apologize if it doesn't work out. Find that leverage in your own head to make it happen. And I'm trying to do that with the podcast. I'm trying to do that with my everything. It's a part of the communal aspect of doing things and the social nature of us as humans. We help each other get shit done. Because we all have things that we're trying to do, and we all have goals that we're trying to achieve. And if your friends are actually your friends, and the people in your life are quality, and they're actual good people to have in your life, then they want the best for you. That's a big point to stress. Like if you don't know how you feel about somebody in your life, just ask yourself, does that person want the best for me? Genuinely? Are they concerned with me doing things that are good for me? Because if they're not, that's just an acquaintance. That's not a person you should associate with that much. Only be friends with people who really, really want you to be happy and to succeed. And surround yourself with those people. And try to weed out the ones who don't give a shit. Who are just, like, trying to get stuff out of you, or they're very, like, detached or whatever. There's too many good people that actually are, you know, interested in being friends the right way to waste time with people like that. But, yeah, so, rambling all around, I'm happy with what I've done. But it's strange, and I was riding this intense high the day after my show, and I had to go to work at this new bar job that I've got, which I really don't like very much, and it just didn't really faze me, because I was like, you know what, I'm leaving pretty soon, and plus, I made a decent amount of money on the show. I made a few hundred dollars, well, you know, between $200 and $300, which is a night bartending. Because people help me out. They threw down. They enjoyed the show. They want to help me. They want to support what I do. And so that just shows me that there's proof. When you see a little bit of evidence that you can hold in your hand and say, see, I can create this stuff. I can make money doing these things. It just makes it that much more tangible. It's like, obviously, you want to make a lot more money, but you can't expect that to happen right now. You just have to make these little motions in the same direction and keep moving in that same direction. So if you were at the show and you threw down and helped me out and paid for the show and you gave me more money than I asked you for, I want you to know genuinely, not only does that mean the world to me, and it's something I am deeper than thankful for, but you're also helping me show other people that they can do it. And hopefully I'm helping you show you that you can do the shit that you're trying to do. Because that's what we're supposed to be to each other. We're supposed to reflect these positive things back and forth. And be like, if I can do what I'm trying to do, you can do what you're trying to do. And whatever that might be. It could be opening a restaurant. It could be fucking buying a house. It could be having a family. It could be doing anything. Whatever that thing is, it's not out of your reach. It's just out of your reach right now. But you can work towards getting it. So fucking move towards it and talk to me about it. If you want to send me a direct message on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, or fucking text me if you know my number. Just, I don't have all the time in the world, and maybe I won't be able to give you as much of my, like, feedback or thoughts as I could, but I'll certainly try. And I, especially if it relates to this show, like, if it relates to this show and you want to kind of share your thing with, if it relates to what I'm talking about right now, basically. So tell me what it is that you're trying to get done and how far you've come with it, or what's been keeping you away from it, or what you're scared about, or whatever. I won't use your name or anything, but it's something to talk about, you know? And it's something we all struggle with. We're all trying to be better than we were yesterday, today. And that's another important thing. That's all you gotta do, is just be better as yourself than you were yesterday. You don't have to be better than other people. You don't have to compare yourself to people that way. You just gotta look at it and be like, I just wanna be at least as good and no worse at whatever I was trying to do yesterday, today. And ideally, slightly better. It's a fucking game. You just try to go a little bit further every time. Like, I fell off on my Inktober drawings thing. There's this thing where all every day in October, artists on Instagram and Facebook and stuff will do a drawing every day during October. And I love doing it because I try to use it to get artwork done for this larger project that I'm working on. But I've just had too much to do, and I've genuinely felt bad about falling off on it. But I hope to catch up while I'm sitting in airports and laying on cots in military bases while I'm gone. So hopefully I'll be able to catch up on that, because that's something I really want to get back to. It's part of a larger project that I would like to do at some point. I have two major projects that I want to do after I get on the other side of my one-person show, which is a screenplay film idea that I have, and then also a graphic novel concept, which I would like to turn into a filmed thing at some point. It's difficult and very, like, lofty as a goal, but that's why I want to do it. So there's that. And, I don't know, man. It's easier said than done, a lot of this shit. Like, I'm talking like it's really simple. And I will make the argument that it is simple if you can think about it in simple terms, whatever it is that you're trying to do. But that's not to say that it isn't hard and complicated. You know, it's like my friend, he's a comedian, and he was trying to get in at, trying to get an audition at one of the comedy clubs in the city, at The Stand, which is like one of the major comedy clubs in Manhattan. Now, this is partially why I don't try to get into a lot of these clubs, because of what he experienced. So he sent this guy who runs the club, The Stand, he sent him a personal email, and he just asked, he said, you know, I'd like to audition at the club if I could. And the guy goes, thanks for the interest, but no thank you. Wouldn't even give the fucking guy an audition. And this is a professional comic. This is a guy who makes his living doing stand-up. The guy wouldn't even give him an audition, just rejection, straight-up rejection. And that's one of the fucking things that really cuts your legs out from under you when something like that happens. You're like, all I'm trying to do is get a fair shake, and somebody's not even giving me a chance. And that feels like this impenetrable wall that goes up in front of you when shit like that happens. And it feels like, oh, well, I guess I'm just running into a dead end with everything here. But what you really find when you step back from it and you try to remove yourself from that frustrating situation, which it is frustrating, and you have every right to be upset about shit like that, but if you just back up a little bit and look at it, you can see the edges around that. It's not a wall in the way of the entire path. It's just a wall around that one thing, and the path keeps going. So you can try to bang your head against that wall and try to get into that thing, which in all likelihood would not be that satisfying once you got in there because you knew they didn't want you to do it in the first place. Or you can just go around that and try to get so far past it that that shit tries to get you to come back later, you know? I think that's the way to look at obstacles in the road, is like, don't miss the road for the obstacles, you know? You look at the obstacles and you're like, well, that's a big-ass hole in the road, but I can just go off-road and go around it and then just keep on going. And then, you know, at some point, maybe somebody from that hole calls you and is like, hey, we'd sure like to have your help back here filling up this hole in the road. It's like, all right, well, pay me 20 times what you pay everybody else, and I'll come. And if they say no, then you could be like, well, that's your loss anyway. So that's why a lot of people end up being assholes when they become successful, I feel like. It's because they're just bitter from being mistreated on the way. But I don't know. Anyway, in other news, my roommate Bob bought us a bidet, which is all the rage now. Everybody's invested in new shitting technology, whether it's a squatty potty or a fucking plastic bidet that you attach to your toilet. I never really thought about getting one. It was never on my priority thing. I mean, but that just goes to show you, you know, it's like you could think you've got everything figured out and you're just setting your ways and you're like, you know what? I've been dumping for this long. I don't really need to change it up, I don't think. And he bought this thing off Amazon. Showed up the next day. He was like, yeah, it was on sale. I was like, where'd it come from? He said, New Jersey. He's like, so we got a discount bidet from New Jersey off of Amazon. And he's like, yeah, would you mind hooking it up? I mean, I will at some point, but, you know, he's like, I got to find a ranch or whatever. He's like, I got it. So I also, with stuff like that, it's like, I would actually rather do that stuff. Just, hey, my name's on the lease, right? You know, for if anybody's going to flood the apartment trying to hook up new butt-blasting devices, it ought to be me. So I set up this thing. Really wasn't too hard. You just disconnect the water from the toilet and reconnect this thing with a splitter, and it goes around the rim. I got to tell you, I was wrong. It's the way of the future. I didn't think that this was going to be a thing that I found valuable, but it cuts your toilet paper usage in half. I don't mean to get too graphic about it, but I got a cleaner butt than you. Almost guaranteed. Almost guaranteed. And that's including if you use wet wipes, which I was using before. Baby wipes, that's always been my jam. But here's the other thing. If you use baby wipes, they don't tell you this, but that'll make your butthole real itchy eventually. It does. If you use them regularly, it dries out your butt, your little butthole there. It'll make it real itchy, and that'll happen. It gives you, like, diaper rash, essentially, as a grown-up. So, yeah, pretty interesting, I gotta say. And the funny thing about the bidet, which I guess it's a funny thing all around, but the aim was perfect. It's not like you had to sight the scope or anything. It just knew exactly where to go. It was like, how did you know exactly? Is everybody's asshole in exactly the same place in relation to it? Your butt hanging down below the toilet bowl? I thought that was really impressive. And it, like, I would figure you'd have to sight it like a rifle. You know, like you shoot a target and then you have to kind of like adjust the scope. But now it just happens. And then, yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. So the first time you do it, you're like, I'm not going to like anything spraying on my butt. You know, and it's not about liking it. But I started equating it to putting contacts in, just to bring this full circle. So the first time you wear contacts, you really don't want to touch your eye. It's a natural instinct to not want to touch your eye. And a lot of people have a real hard time even understanding how you can do that. But the point is once you get contacts in, you're like, oh, well, what I get for this is worth the risk of damaging my eye, and I know the right way to touch my eye. So now I can put contacts in while I'm driving if I need to, like a stop sign. And, you know, I know how to deal with it, so I can touch my eye at any point, which is not a really great thing to do, but I'm able to do it. So it's a weird skill that I have. And now, with the bidet, I didn't like the idea of something spraying against my butthole because I felt like that wouldn't be worth, you know, the result. But as it turns out, it is. So now it doesn't make me flinch. So I think I could stand there and touch my eye and spray my butthole with a garden hose, and that's literally not something that I need to do, but it's a skill that I have. It's almost, I feel like the least useful X-Man on the team. You know, I'd be like, what are your superpowers? It's like, oh, I can fly. It's like, I can stretch real far. I can turn things into ice. It's like, oh, me, I can touch my eye and spray my butt with stuff. It's like, well, we're going to put you on, like, the B squad. Maybe you'll just, you want to clean up around here? We don't really need you to go out and fight crime with us. anyway, yeah, so my butt's cleaner than you is the point of this story. Well, we're at about 45 minutes, and I really, what I'm doing is I'm recording this one on my on my laptop instead of my little desktop computer because I'm testing this to make sure that I can take this equipment with me on the go because I want to stay on my regiment out there in L.A. and in Houston and in the old world also. So this seems to be good to go. Let's see what else I've got. All right, so before I go, we're still sticking with the November 10th No Social Media Day. That's something that I want us all to do. If you enjoy the show and you feel like you get anything out of this, let's band together and make that a thing. So on November 10th, which is going to be a Sunday, it'll be extra hard. You'll have to do other things. So that's not to say that you can't use your email or text people or, you know, make phone calls, but no Twitter, no Instagram, no Facebook. November 10th. We're all going to band together and do that as Scientologists. And we'll push harder towards that as we get closer. The other thing is, if you would like to rate and review the podcast, I always greatly, greatly appreciate that. It helps people find the podcast. And please spread the word. Pass it along to other people that you know. And talk about it on social media or however you want to do it. It makes a big difference. And if you know anybody who's in Houston, if you happen to be in Houston, please come to the show on October 23rd at the Secret Group. That's at 7:30. And there's tickets available now. I know they're less money if you buy them now. It's like $10 day of, $5 a day leading up to it. So there's that, and that's available on the website, the Secret Group. Let's see. Yeah, so if you're not in Houston or you're unable to go, please just help me fill it out and send people there because it would really help just in general, and I would really appreciate it. And I like to think that it's going to be a great show, and you or anybody that you send will hopefully really enjoy it because the people who came to the show in New York really seem to enjoy themselves, and that means so much more to me than I can explain that it means anything to anybody. So there's that. And then also, if you want to support the show, and if you enjoy the podcast, not only can you rate and review and subscribe and spread it to other people, but you can also be a Patreon on my Patreon page. You could do a $5 a month donation or a $10 a month donation or however much you want to do. And I've already got one Scientologist. Or are we going with apostles or possibly, what was it? Apologists. We got to take a survey and see which is the best. But going with that. So I got one person, my very good friend. I'm not ashamed to say his name. His name's Derek. He's one of my greatest supporters and friends. And I'm sure he's listening and possibly running. So Derek, you are leading the charge with the Scientologists. Hopefully hundreds will rally behind you and then we'll just do all kinds of fun shit. And there's going to be fun new private episodes for people who are subscribers, and there's a lot of benefits to it. And the more subscribers I get, the more I'm able to do that. So once I get a few people signing up, then I can start doing these special episodes and it'll be a lot of fun. So there's that too. So in order to find that Patreon, literally just Google Paul Odo Patreon, and it's like the first thing that comes up. So yeah, if you like the show and you want to give me $5 a month because you feel like this is worth $5 a month of entertainment, that would be really fucking awesome and encouraging and special. And I will thank you in person and on the show. Aside from that, the next time I will be talking to you, I will either be in Los Angeles, Houston, or Europe. But until then, guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. It's always really special that you listen, and it means the world to me. And if there's anything on here that you enjoyed particularly or would like me to talk more about or wish that I would have said, don't hesitate to reach out. I always want to make this interactive and enjoyable for everybody, and the more I hear from you, the more I want to do it. And every time I get a review or a new subscription or anybody spreads the word, it just makes me that much more motivated to do it. So please help me help you help me help you, and let's all help each other and try to be good to yourself and other people out there, please. And do not be afraid. This is Paul Odo. This has been Scientology, episode 39. Have a good night, guys. Take care of yourselves.